when people come to make a podcast, they'll often find somebody's already doing a podcast like that.
Yeah.
Right? And so for you to come in and do this, I can imagine a lot of people would have been like, why? Why?
I know, yeah. And I mean, and to be honest, I think when we were first approached, we were like, oh, is there a market there? Is there a market? I mean, there were, at the time, I think there was one being made where Bill Nighy was playing Watson, but he was a cat. So there's like, there's so many different iterations of it. And there was the, another one on Amazon, the Moriarty focus one with Dominic from, I can't remember his surname.
Monon?
That's it. And we were like, is there a need for it? But then when we realized that, oh, it's all the short stories, and coming back to Joel's point, it's almost like Shakespearean as far as you've got the tragedies, you've got the comedies. There's a little bit of that with Sherlock as well. There are some cases where you're like, this could be taken and put as a plot for James Bond, for a James Bond film. Mm. And there's other ones where you're like, this could be like Hetty Wainthrop or Midsummer Murders. You know, there's such low stakes and there's massive stakes. And we've got everything in between, so we can really play with that.
Yeah. So we know you're going to write the next James Bond film. That's done.
We won't. He doesn't like James Bond, do you?
Yeah, not till he writes it.
No, but that's it. He's a bit old hat now. They're definitely the progression of the James Bond films is you've outgrown yourself, and that model of man doesn't work in the modern world because spies are actually quite dull. Maybe on purpose, or maybe it's all characters. I want in a second for you to say very nice things about Gullhanger, because I think they are the production company of the moment. But first, and I know you touched on the gap that the BBC left, I think we've seen that with Doctor Who and Big Finish. Mm. Like the fan base just then takes over and it becomes an expansive world. I would like to know, obviously you guys did The Offensive, how hard was it having built that to leave it behind? Because somebody once said to me, if you're onto a good thing, certainly in audio and comedy, keep it going. Like, if you're Steve Coogan, keep doing Partridge. Maybe not as much, but you can never really let it go. How hard was it to think, right, okay, now is a good time and we'll take a gamble on something else?
I think The Offensive, it's a really good question. I think The Offensive, with it being our first project together, sort of professional project together in audio, we didn't want it to go. I mean, we did 5 years of The Offensive, and so much happened over that time in our personal lives that I think we were like, we don't want it to go on forever, because eventually somebody will go, oh yeah, after year six, it got a bit crap. And we'd be annoyed with ourselves. I mean, John Cleese did, 12 episodes of Fawlty Towers there? And people still look back on that as
seasons of The Office in the UK.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what we were kind of thinking. We didn't want it to become a dead horse that we were flogging, as much as we loved it. And the 5-year plan for in the storyline was reflected in the show, the storyline of the show as well. And also, Joel is a nihilist and he likes to just kill everyone off, so there's some spoilers.
Nihilist. I mean, I don't know what, when it comes to football, it's like nihilism and steroids. Like, it cannot possibly have a happy ending. Plus, it's
it's never tempted to scratch the itch and do one. Because I bet you'd have all that muscle memory.
But it was tied up in such a lovely bow, wasn't it?
It was. I wonder if we were doing sort of like season drops. Here's 10 episodes. Everyone have a break. Here's 10 episodes. Maybe it would have felt like more of a thing. But it always felt like such a weekly show to us. It would be so strange to have, here's just one, or here's just two.
But then there was always, and maybe this is your writing, there was always something I noticed in it where there would be little breadcrumbs and then things would happen later and you go, oh, this was always planned, this was always there. Similarly, like your bad wolf in Doctor Who, those kinds of things that come through. And you go, that's something that stood out to me when I first listened to the show, because I would say for a lot of podcasters, you literally do the show in front of you and then move on to the next one. Mm. You don't really plan ahead that much. So that was one of the things that stood out to me as being different with what you guys did.
Yeah, well, you sort of have to do it as well. Like a modern audience, because it's drama, are expecting, okay, where's the arc? We've genuinely had to introduce that concept to Sherlock. I think we've got away with maybe 14 months.
Yeah.
We've got away with maybe just over a year of standalone stories, standalone this, standalone that. But now we've just started to dribble in that Moriarty's out there. He listens to the show.
Yeah.
And all this kind of thing, and people absolutely adore it, and I'm absolutely gutted, because it's not because it's the malaise thing, I think it's from like a purist thing, we thought our USP is, here's the short stories, modernize as the guy that wrote them would have intended. These characters don't know each other. They're not all linked. It's not all part of one grand plan.
We wanted people to jump in and go, oh, I remember reading The Redheaded League. Let me pick it up.
Yeah.
Which you can, because it's before when we started.
Yeah.
But for now, people are just going to be listening out for Moriarty.
It's just what people expect. And you can completely oversaturate when you do standalone stuff every week.
What's the secret to having a good Patreon, like in terms of the content and things that you put on there and stuff that you do for the fans? Because you've done it very well with The Offensive and now again with Sherlock.
I think don't neglect it and then just kind of let it go from stuff that's weekly to fortnightly, and people will go, hang on a minute, what am I getting for my money? What am I, everyone's struggling in a moment for money, so you want to make sure you give value for money. Also, be proactive with speaking to your fans and to your listeners. We're lucky because Joel cosplay is the wrong term, but Joel is John Watson on Twitter, and then he's John Watson on the Discord. So people can ask him, can they have live Q&As with John Watson, and occasionally Sherlock Holmes as well, when I remember to log in.
Yeah.
And that's for a show with a passionate fan base like Sherlock, that's a nice thing for listeners to be able to do, to be able to chat with those characters. They're all aware. You made a wrestling show. You know about suspension disbelief. That's the true joy of pro wrestling.
Turn him into a wrestler was the first.
Well, there you go.
Life imitates arts. Yeah. When we go to Edinburgh and he's in cosplay flyering, and then they come and see the show. It's exactly the same. Like, why? Like, if you're a Disney character, why take the mask off? Right? Just stay in character and keep it going.
Yeah. So I think as far as Patreon goes, just make sure you've got enough to offer value for money would be my tip. You can't just. I mean, it's fine to have something where you're like, give us a couple of quid, keep the lights on. That's fine, because a lot of people will do that. I'll do that with shows that I like.
If this is completely unromantic, and I apologise, but the people at Goalhanger would tell you the same thing. There he is now. If you do big drops, Wrestler's History is a good example. They'll say, here's...
part one of El Tor.
French Revolution. Yeah. You know, Dominic and Tom are going to do all 7 or 8 for the members. It makes the members feel really fortunate for a start, but also it makes people want to buy into it. We have there is nothing that we've done that has been more attracting to people or has made members happier than you got the stuff first, here it is. Genuinely, that is
real value.
Yeah, that is, I mean, if you want to be completely unromantic and dive into numbers, we release a big series, we get a bunch of people and the members get really happy. They don't mind the fact that they have 3 or 4 weeks of smaller additional content of Watson and Sherlock having, answering questions or maybe a behind the scenes for me and Adam. They want to gobble up that, binge that story and know that it's made for them and that the rest of the world is just waiting on it week by week.
Yeah, we're still in a binging culture, aren't we, with Netflix and Prime and Disney. People want to binge and they want to kind of get ahead and then rewatch it for stuff that they missed before. And I can understand that. And that's what they do with our show.
Well, you've created several fantastic worlds and enhanced at least one other in the form of Sherlock. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Your body of work. Just quickly then on Goalhanger, like, are you pitching proactively the next thing for them? Or are they like, you guys would be perfect for this thing that we're cooking up? Because actually, as a podcast agency, as a sale, ad sales, they all have to work in tandem. Yeah. So it's got to work for everybody. How does that next big idea comes through for you, Buzz?
We're lucky because Tony Pasta, who is a co-founder of Goalhanger, it was his idea to do Sherlock & Co. And when we signed up for them, it was for other content as well, wasn't it? Sort of a first look deal at our other content that we're working on. Sherlock's become such a beast that everything's taken a bit of a backseat, but we are working on a second show with Goalhanger at the moment and a potential third at the end of the year, but we can't say any more than that, I don't think, really.
The only thing sort of in that area is that, again, it was dictated to us to go and make. The next thing that we're making is their commission rather than something that we feel to them.
Yeah. And as creatives, that makes sense because you're feeding then back into business needs to keep the lights on, to make money, to keep growing audiences for the network.
Yeah.
And that allows you the freedom to go off and do the writing and the creativity that you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, also, to blow Goalhanger's horn, their reach is completely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And it is so because of the amount of people that listen to their stuff, but also they're not, and this isn't me having a go at Audible or Spotify, they're not Audible in Spotify. They don't have a library of hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of things. They have at most a dozen things. So when they do recommend something, when they do a trailer of something, they get really big uptick of people listening.
Yeah.
Because they're so confident, because they are having hit after hit after hit, it makes us confident. And then we release the show, we sort of go, you know, we think we know what it is. We think there's an audience for it.
Yeah.
We could be with a bunch of other networks that won't necessarily find that audience, but we know that Goalhanger will find it.
And I think having the Gary Lineker name attached to it is such a phrase that I've heard used a few times in the podcast show already, is a pattern disruptor. Because you're not just, it's come from Audible, it's come from Amazon, but like you said, all the names I would expect content, and then I'm kind of preconditioned as to what that content will be like.
Yeah.
You'll go, why is Gary Lineker like involved in podcasting? And all of a sudden, you've stopped people in their tracks of scrolling or listening to enough to go, I'm going to give this a bit of attention.
Yeah.
I think it's such a disruptive moment for podcasts.
Yeah, and it's nice because he is a listener as well. He loves the show, which is very, very nice. And he's had a cameo in a show as well, so... He's singing our praises online, which is fun, you know? It's always good to get a little bit of traction online and get ears on the show. So we're very fortunate, yeah. And he cares, because, you know, he's co-founded the company with Jack and Tony, and they all care about the show. And that's all you can ask from your producers, that they care. Otherwise, you're just another fish in the pond, whereas we're in a nice pond with nice people. And it's, yeah.
So I guess the final question is... who's your favourite character in Sherlock?
Oh, my word. We had this not long ago, didn't we, from our listeners on a Q&A, and I think I went for Wiggins, who is one of the Irregulars, which in the original stories, I believe the Irregulars were children. They're like Arful Dodger and Fagin, you know, Arful Dodger's gang. And in our version, it's my friend John, who is 42, I think, John. He'll kill me if he sees this. And he got this really deep sort of, you know, Dublin fuzz, and he—that was more Northern Irish, really. But he's from Limerick, and he puts on this deeper voice. But we've made the character; he's just turned 18, and it's a little bit like Wolfie in that episode of The Inbetweeners, where Will goes on work experience. Yeah. And it's like, you're 17. That's what we wanted for that. So just for comedic value, I love it when Wiggins turns up.
Yeah, Wiggins should good. My really boring answer, but it probably is honest. He's John Watson.
Yeah.
I
was going for none of the main three. You've been really boring.
Yeah, that is really boring.
I know, yeah, otherwise.
I like a ham and cheese sandwich.
Yeah, yeah.
Easy on the cheese.
Yeah, no mayo. You like Langdale Pike?
I do like Langdale Pike, yeah. Langdale Pike.
No one from Scotland Yard.
Oh. Tom Gregson, I apologise, Anne. I meant
we'll have to cut that.
It's one
cut that, sorry. Tom Gregson, D.I. Tom Gregson.
Yeah. Our phrase at Podomedy and on the podcast advice show is don't start a podcast alone. You guys have worked together for a while. If there are podcasting duos out there, or there's somebody who wants to be in a duo or doesn't know how to get started, is there any sort of advice that you could give for them? Because it is a lonely thing, and even two of you, when you first start out, still quite lonely.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think make friends at school, then don't be that close until a few years later.
Right.
Yeah. No.
That's too prescriptive for our situation.
I don't know. Yeah, we're very fortunate to have found each other.
But podcasting is such a community, right? So people can reach out to other... If you want to be like a show, people can reach out to them and go, hey, can I have some advice? Or can you give me
Absolutely.
Some...
Absolutely.
It's not a closed door, right?
No. And events like this, there'll be so many people here in that exact situation today. And I just encourage people to just... don't wait, just reach out. If you've got a good idea, just reach out. And people always want to collaborate.
Yeah, actually, I mean, this is a really good example. I mean, I've ended up working with you guys because I basically fanboyed you from The Offensive and said, I love your show, it's great.
Doesn't hurt. Flattery doesn't hurt.
Oh, absolutely.
Except you didn't say it in that voice, you said it in your normal voice. And I remember saying to Adam, he's got a really good voice.
Yeah.
He's got a really good natural voice.
Yeah,
because I made you one of... the opening voices in Jackie the Ripper.
I can't find his knob.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Is that
a sound from the show? Okay.
Yeah. Talking about something else. There's something about ants, but like we really like natural sounding voices. Narlin is another example that we always come back to, because no matter what she does, like you put her in a scenario of playing various characters, it always seems so natural.
Oh, yeah.
Helena's the same. So yeah, we always kind of liked that natural, just that kind of like naturalism. That means nudity, doesn't it?
Naturalism means podcast.
Yeah, imagine that in audio.
So naked. It's very descriptive.